Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. And in today's episode, we are going to dive into a different aspect of motivation. So we've talked about motivation in the past. I think today we may touch on some different pieces of it, which, you know, we hope to get your wheels spinning. We hope to get you thinking about maybe some deeper questions in terms of, you know, in terms of why you play tennis in the first place. And we're going to look at some of the research in self-determination theory in particular. And just as a little bit of a background there, you know, we'll start with sort of those three basic needs of competence, autonomy, and relatedness. We could talk a little bit about what each of those are, but also talk about sort of this continuum, which ranges from, which ranges from a motivation to intrinsic motivation, but it also outlines extrinsic motivation and, you know, some of the different forms of extrinsic motivation. And we can talk a little bit about what that is and talk about both, I think, in our practice as sports psychology professionals, but also, you know, in other ways, what we've seen in terms of this topic, in terms of motivation, in terms of maybe what holds people back, how people maybe get in their own head about motivation, and also maybe some of the environmental factors that, you know, we all exist within a society. And oftentimes, you know, it has to do with that environment that we're around or some of those people that we're around that can actually impact some of these factors in terms of motivation. So I think as a starting point, we can touch on some of these different pieces of the topic.
So let's begin, Josh, with the three basic psychological needs that are underneath really the intrinsic motivation. You named them: autonomy, competence, and relatedness. And self-determination theory has a number of sub-theories. And this one would fit under that, and what we call basic psychological needs theory. And the whole idea is that, you know, once you're beyond the need for, say, food, security, safety, right? Those are really some essential needs, and if those haven't been met, then you have to work on that. But once you have that, once you are, you know, you have your food, safety, security, love needs satisfied, then it's more about, okay, there are higher level ones, and so we'll call those autonomy, competence, and relatedness. And now, starting with autonomy, what is that psychological need? We all have a need to feel like we're in control of our lives. We want to have some say in what we do. So let's say you're a tennis player. Now, at a certain age, you may not have the wherewithal to make suggestions about particular drills that we want to do or whatever. But, you know, throughout the life of a tennis player, we're getting hopefully to a point where a tennis player could opine about what they want to work on and what are some drills, right? So you want to feel like you have some say or some choice in terms of what's happening in the training environment, right? The motivational climate. So that's autonomy. And this is especially true at work. Many people have their need for autonomy thwarted in the workplace, whether that's through a boss who doesn't let you do something or just the overall environment. You may feel like you're always being told what to do and you don't get to work on what you want to do. Second is competence. So we all have a need to work on something that we were good at or we want to develop skill in. And tennis, for those of us who are listening today, is probably an area of our lives in which we have chosen to try to improve. And so we're satisfying that need to become competent at something. And there are probably many other things that everybody who's listening also works on in terms of the competence and feeling like they're good at it. You know, none of us are really just one-dimensional, we're just tennis players. There are probably other aspects. And then the last part is relatedness. We all have a need, and we have to understand this, that we are social creatures. We have a need to connect with other people. And that can occur through tennis as well. The people we play with, maybe people on our team, maybe a relationship with a coach, a relationship with family members, you know, that all might be around tennis. And so these are important things, I think, to keep in mind, Josh, when maybe you're noticing your own motivation and maybe goes up and down, and maybe notice what strikes you when you're not feeling great. Is how is the training environment? Do you feel like you have some say there, or is your coach always telling you what to do and never asking you what you want? Maybe you're really there because you want to just hang out with your friends, and maybe you're not seeing your friends, or maybe you're in an environment where the coaches don't let you talk to anybody and it's overly serious. That might not be fun, et cetera, right? So you can look at these three things as a means of understanding your own training environment, and what might be, you know, different or better for you in certain situations than in others. And so I think we've just given people a way of looking at what's going on in their careers and understanding, hey, with these three things, autonomy, competence, and relatedness, now I can kind of look at things a little bit differently and understand them better.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think another way to think about it is you can think back to maybe certain times where you maybe haven't been as motivated, or something's gotten in the way, and you can think, okay, was it one of these three pieces? Was it the competence piece, right? Where maybe, okay, I'm striving for mastery, I'm striving to be the best player that I can be, but something was getting in the way, right? Maybe it was an injury, or maybe it was, you know, maybe it was just as a slump, or maybe I just didn't necessarily feel as inspired to work on my game and to try to get to that highest level, right? So maybe it was that piece, or maybe it was the autonomy piece. Maybe I was on a, you know, maybe for, I know for a lot of adult players, they play for a USTA league team. And I know there can be, you know, different challenges there or drama there, certainly. And sometimes there's a lack of autonomy where maybe there's a captain and making certain decisions, and you feel out of that decision-making process, you feel like you can't, you know, just decide who you play with or what position. And I know other people feel sort of that lack of autonomy in different ways where they, Brian, you brought up the workplace setting, but I think that this happens in all different areas of life where we want to be able to make choices and feel in control of our own life and decisions and that sort of thing. And we can't. And that, I think that can be a challenge. So I think, you know, as you look back, you can think about, you know, was that one of the factors, or was it that relatedness piece? Was it that you didn't have that community? You didn't have that social element? It wasn't, I think for a lot of people, that social element is one of the factors that really makes things fun. You know, this is a topic I've been thinking a lot about. And I think for most people, when they start playing their sport, they enjoy it. It's fun. It's, you know, for a lot of people, they get to be around people they enjoy, whether it's friends or whether it's just other people in their group. But it's, you know, I think the relatedness aspect, that community aspect can really make things fun. So I think it, another angle to look at it is if you can think of times where maybe you've been felt less motivated or less inspired to play, was it one of those three pieces that was maybe missing in particular?
Yeah, and I recently had a conversation with a high school coach. I'm going to go talk to his team in a few weeks. And he was telling me all about, and he's a girls coach, and he was telling me all about his team. And without even realizing it, he's describing like, well, there are two or three players who are, they're really good. They want to get good. And then, but the rest of the girls, they just like hanging out with their friends. And he was saying it as if like, that's a problem.
Uh-huh.
But the reality is, if we look at this model of motivation, is it a problem? Because then he went on to say, but you know what? They're all great teammates. They cheer for each other and they're always loud. And I'm like, okay, this really isn't a problem. It's just whether we as coaches truly understand maybe the more dominant motive for why our players are there. And I think a lot of coaches, they make an assumption, maybe because it's well who they are, that everybody should be here to get better. And of course, and that that's their main driver. But it's not. And understanding that some of your players are here to get better, if you're talking about like a high school team, and some of your players are here because they like the relatedness piece. They like being a teammate. They like being with their friends. And a tennis team is a great place to do that. Yep. Now, of course, you can then work with that group in a little bit different way. You could use different language with that group than the group that is, you know, pursuing competence and mastery. The group that perhaps is there mostly for their friends, they may not be your hardest working group, and that's what this coach said. But could we also get them to realize, hey, you're here. Why not give your best effort? That's a good skill. That's a good life skill to work on. And, you know, your best effort doesn't have to be, you know, like you running a 4-minute mile, but try. Try a little bit more, right? Let's get better at maybe learning to do some hard things, but you're still here with your friends. Let's focus on that. Let's be really good about that. Let's do some team unity stuff. And then maybe you talk to your other players who really want it. All right, let's work on this today. Let's really work on certain tactics or strategies, or maybe we could work on something technical. And that is a different conversation for that group. So I think the more we as coaches understand that our players, of the three things, one of them will be probably a little bit more of the driver than the others. I remember taking a leadership class at Harvard some years ago, Josh, and this was not necessarily based on self-determination theory, but a theory of motivation developed a little bit before that by a guy named David McClelland, who was a researcher and professor at Harvard. And he talked a lot about dominant motives, like that there are these three things, but one of them tends to be dominant. And people who fit a certain profile of being the best at what they do have certain dominant motives over others. Not that there's anything wrong with being dominant in relatedness or affiliation, but understanding the dominant motives of your players is important because it can help you talk to them better, connect with them better, know why they're here. And then, you know, you yourself can then create a better environment for all of them, because you as the coach, you are the designer of the motivational climate that your players are in. And we would love for everybody to have a positive experience. So if you're more interested in mastery and competence, okay, we're going to work on that. We'll still work on being a great teammate, still work on you having some choice there. But I also know that you're really here to get better. If other people are there to be related, hey, let's take advantage of that strength of yours of being a great teammate, being a great friend. We're still going to work on making you a little bit better player. And we're still going to ask for your feedback on how we do things. So I think from a coaching perspective and maybe even a parental perspective, knowing what really drives your player or players is an important part of the development process of your young player, but also of yourself, right? Knowing what drives you, why you go.
Totally. And when it comes to understanding that, I think there's, you know, if we were to sort of think of that scale or that continuum, you know, I think probably people, I think many people have probably felt amotivated in something at some point in their lives. Could have to do with tennis and maybe not feeling like anything's necessarily motivating you or inspiring you to play, or, you know, or in a different area of life. So we can start to think about a continuum where, you know, I think a lot of people have probably heard of intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, right? Extrinsic being that we're playing for some sort of reward outside of us, whether that be ranking or rating, or maybe playing to, you know, to play for a certain team, right? Maybe it's, I want to play college tennis, or I want to get a scholarship or something like that. And yeah, so we're sort of comparing the extrinsic and the intrinsic, but really there's a continuum. There's different types of extrinsic motivation. And I think also it, you know, oftentimes is oversimplified into, you know, you just have to be intrinsically motivated at the, and that extrinsic shouldn't matter, or shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't necessarily care about that. But that's really not the case, because it generally is, and I would say it should be, some sort of mix between the two. There should be certain intrinsic factors that motivate you, that push you, that you really care about, in terms of, you know, why, you know, what is the satisfaction involved with playing the sport in the first place? Why is this inherently pleasing, or why do you enjoy it, right? Why is it interesting to you? But there can also be those extrinsic factors in terms of, you know, what might that look like? What does that mean to you in terms of, you know, what are some of the rewards, right? There's nothing wrong with people being reward focused in certain areas, right? Whether they're playing for the money or the recognition, or, you know, some of these other factors, or the achievement aspect, and understanding that when we achieve things, others recognize us. And so I think, you know, we don't have to push that aside and say that things have to just be intrinsic, but having some sort of mix and really trying to be as clear as possible about what that mix looks like, or why we play in the first place, I think can be really helpful so that we can orient things towards those driving factors.
Yeah. And one of the things I do when I first start working with a new client is I have them complete an assessment called the sport motivation scale. And they, you know, when they fill it out, they have no idea what, like, intrinsic, extrinsic, and all these other parts of the continuum. And they simply rate themselves on a number of factors. And then I produce essentially a report that shows, you know, basically how they rated themselves and how it relates to the various areas of motivation based on self-determination theory. And if people are interested, they can just email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Be happy to send you this, and then we can send you the report based on your answers to it. And so this is one of the first things I'll look at, Josh, is when they answer this. I want to see, like, what their motivational profile is, because as you said, we want a good, healthy mix of stuff, but the profile could also show maybe somebody's a little too much worried about outside rewards, and they're less concerned with the pleasure of playing the sport, the pleasure of learning more about the sport, or maybe they're more focused on, if they don't play, they feel bad about themselves, kind of thing. And so the report basically gives you, you know, some totals in each of the areas. And the totals are just a really quick way for me to look at where they are in these categories. And the way the report is structured, sort of intrinsic is at the top. And then we go down the page all the way to the bottom, which is like amotivated, right? So the cleanest, longest burning sense, or, you know, source of fuel is at the top. And then, you know, the next couple are still pretty clean, maybe not as clean. And then we get all the way to the bottom where it's not as productive. And so we ideally want to see the numbers, ideally, go from very high all the way down to something kind of lower. And usually it's a bit of a mix, but on occasion, some of the numbers at the lower part of the report are higher. And that just gives, you know, people like you and me areas to explore, questions to ask, also discuss opportunities for improvement, in terms of like, all right, well, what do you think, you know, how do you think we could learn to like actually playing more? Because if we look at intrinsic motivation as like a definition, think of like your 5 or 6 year old self who just like likes to run outside and play. There's no real purpose other than I love playing. And when you first started tennis, that was probably a lot of it. And then as you got older, you got a little bit better, maybe more ego-oriented stuff started to come into play, more judgment, more criticism. But your original reason for playing was just like, I love being active and hitting the ball and this is super fun and just like why you go to the playground. When we lose that, I think we do lose something of the joy of the sport. And so this is just a good way to kind of for us to connect as professionals with our clients on how are they doing with that? And if they're not doing great with that, we could, you know, do some things to work and improve that area of your motivation and understand that better. Because you're going to enjoy your game more if a lot of it can come from within you. If you can identify with your sport in more positive ways than just like how other people think of you or feeling bad if you don't do something. So it just provides an opportunity for some interesting discussions, this type of report.
Absolutely. Do you find that there's ever pushback? Do you find, because I think for a lot of people, they grow up and as you said, that 5 or 6 year old version of themselves, it's fun. They're enjoying it. They're just playing. They don't have a care in the world. And then at a certain point that starts to shift. And I think with a lot of people, you know, I think with a lot of people that we both work with, they're playing at a higher level and they're really caring about their results and performance and that sort of thing. And I think in a certain way, people are trained or sort of reconditioned to prioritize that. To prioritize those results and prioritize the competence or mastery piece, I guess, and maybe I'm just sort of thinking out loud here, but do you have any suggestions for how to help players understand that the intrinsic piece is important, that fun piece is important, that, you know, are there things that you try to do to help them if you experience that pushback?
Yeah, if there's some resistance to it, which can happen, of course, I think then the next logical question is, well, are you actually enjoying what you're doing? Is being so focused on a lot of these things that you can't control, how satisfying does that feel? What's your experience like on the court? If it's fine, then no, okay. I'm okay with that, but it rarely is. Mm-hmm. It's usually this is a player who's kind of struggling with the journey, even, you know, like during a practice or during a match, things tend to be very up and down and very critical of what is occurring in terms of level and result, those non-controllable things. And so it just really becomes like, well, would you like to enjoy this more? Would you like to improve more? There might be some things that we can do on this particular topic that could help with that. And I think, you know, in our profession, Josh, is for us, we just have to kind of roll with a lot of the resistance for a bit and just get the client or the student to talk a little bit more about what it is they're looking for and be somewhat Socratic with guiding them toward, you know, a better way of moving forward for themselves so that they feel good and that they can ultimately get what they actually want out of the sport.
I think that absolutely makes sense. And I think with a lot of people, it's, you know, it's almost as if they've forgotten about it in certain ways.
Yeah.
It's within them. Okay. They enjoy being out there. They remember why they started playing in the first place, but it sometimes it almost feels like that's been, you know, forgotten.
Totally.
Or almost like trained out of them.
Overwritten, maybe, in a way. Yeah.
Say that again.
Overwritten, maybe, in a way.
Exactly. So I think it is, you know, I think even helping a player go back to some of those early moments and maybe reflecting on it, maybe helping them think about, you know, why did they enjoy it so much in those early moments? When did they decide to start taking it seriously? What did that look like? Help them sort of go back to some of those early moments and help them sort of rekindle. Why are they doing this in the first place? Yes, it's great to have, achievement as one of the underlying factors, but it can't be everything. It can be hollow if that's everything, if it's all about the achievement process and not about enjoying it in the first place. I almost would compare it in a certain way to someone who's going on a hike. And they're going on a hike and it's all about reaching the top of the mountain. And that's all that they care about. And they're not looking around. They're not taking in the scenery. They're not stopping to have a break or to eat something. It's all about getting to the top. And then they get to the top. They experience that brief moment of satisfaction for getting there. And then it's all right, let's come back down. And it's, yes, it's important to get to the top. Yes, that satisfaction, yes, that that achievement piece is certainly important. And I think it's a important piece of what we do and of what tennis players ought to be striving for, but it can't be everything. I think it really is a hollow pursuit if that's everything. I think it's, it's maybe satisfying or, you're getting something out of it for that brief moment, but the rest of that time you're not present. You're not enjoying what you're doing. You're not enjoying the pursuit for its own sake. You're simply, aiming for something more. You're simply aiming for that reward, which is fleeting ultimately.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, when they pursue things in that way, they get to the top and they're like, oh, I thought it would feel better than this. Or like you said, it can be very fleeting, and then you just go down and you don't appreciate how you got there. And so I think, yeah, so those are important things to think about in terms of where we're going. It's, as you said, it's not just about achievement. It is about, for us, that never ending journey of mastery. I think most of the people listening to this podcast are probably interested in the competence mastery piece. A guy named George Leonard wrote a really good book on the topic of mastery. Highly recommend that to people to take a look at it on your journey. It just provides great perspectives about things like being on the plateau. Just like a lot of really cool stuff. It's a pretty short book, written in the early 90s. And if you are on that path of mastery, highly recommend reading that, because it isn't just about the achievement piece, right? Mastery is hopefully a lifelong journey. Now, you may not like always be able to improve based on your age and your physicality, but there might be other things in your life that you decide to pursue mastery in. Maybe you just start as a beginner with something, and now you're on a different path of mastery. And the whole idea is, as you said, Josh, to appreciate and enjoy what you're doing each day, that journey of learning and improving and feeling good with what you're doing. Maybe trying to tap into that kid in you that loves to do something just for the sake of doing it. And I think the more that we work on that ourselves as tennis players, because if we connect this back, Josh, to our definition of what it means to be competitive, the first priority is enjoying competing and playing the sport. And that's tapping back into that kid that loves to play games, that goes out there and wants to do it. And there's an egolessness part of that, is just to go out and do it for the sake of doing it, and not having to worry so much about winning and losing and playing well and not playing well. It's that more that activity. It's hard to do, but the more we can connect with that, then the more competitive actually it's you're going to be, because you're enjoying this very hard thing to do. And if you're enjoying it, you're going to learn more, etc. Right? So, go back and maybe listen to some of our episodes about what it means to be competitive. That whole definition really falls, I think, very nicely in line with these basic psychological needs that we're discussing today.
And to be competitive, or to be maybe a great competitor, is okay. Am I doing everything that I need to do? Right? Am I giving everything to that process? And it's a lot harder to I think you can, if you're not necessarily motivated, I think you can do that for a period of time. You can be competitive. You can try to win for a period of time. But I think at a certain point, you reach your breaking point. You say, you know what? I can't. I'm recognizing that this isn't ultimately getting anywhere. I'm not enjoying this process. So I think having sort of that more well-formed understanding of what actually drives us is really important here. Because if it's all about, you know, if you don't necessarily have that well-formed understanding of your own motivating factors, and you're competing and you're striving and you're trying to win, and it's all about that, then, you know, ultimately I think for a lot of people, they reach that breaking point.
Yeah. And I just, for my own career, my mid-20s, I think I was near that breaking point. And then, around 26, 27, got a little bit reinvigorated in that process, you know, through the tennis community, et cetera. And then when I learned more about this topic, Josh, it helped me to create more of a purpose around what I was wanting to do with tennis, to want to make the second half of my career more about this journey and becoming the best I could be, where the first half of the journey was very up and down and at times emotionally painful because it was all about playing well and winning and very ego oriented in that regard. And that's what led me to that point when I was about 25 or 26, where it's like, I think I'm going to stop playing. It just wasn't enjoyable anymore, and I was getting nothing out of it. And, you know, and thankfully I was able to stay in and learn more about this. And this has made, quite honestly, all the difference in pursuing, you know, a path of mastery rather than having to constantly justify myself with a win today. And so I think this kind of discussion and looking at something like self-determination theory can really be helpful to individual players to put them on a path of enjoyment, of learning and improvement more, and really playing for that longer journey. And it's such a lighter way of going about it, Josh. Like, you feel lighter emotionally on the court. You're not weighed down by every little mistake you make or what every other person might be thinking while they're watching you. There's just so much emotional baggage that is now gone. And to me, self-determination theory and just theories of motivation have been super helpful in understanding that.
I totally get that. And I think it's a more sustainable way of going about things, right? If it's all about reward and results, you know, ultimately you're going to hit a roadblock. Ultimately, you're going to have a slump. Ultimately, you're going to lose a match where you feel like you never should have lost to that player. You know, ultimately, if it's all about the results, then essentially there's not a foundation that the entire process is built on, because, you know, because it nobody's always achieving the types of results that they want to have. Where if instead, you know, we're enjoying it, we like the people that we're playing with, right? And we get to choose who that is. We get to choose the setting, right? Whether that's a team, whether that's a league, whether that's clinics, whether that's you playing with your friends, right? Whatever that is. But if you're able to base that in something that's a little bit more stable, and I think we're bringing up other ways rather than just the external piece. Again, the external piece can be a piece of it, but if it's all based on that, then, you know, when you hit those trials and tribulations, that slump, that injury, whatever it is, it's a lot harder to keep going because it feels that you've failed, because it feels that everything that you've been basing your journey, you know, basing your what drives you on has ultimately failed because the results aren't there. It's all about the results, and ultimately you're not getting them. So I think having it, you know, having that maybe deeper understanding leads to that that more well-formed foundation where you're able to, you know, I think withstand those ups and downs and be more resilient and, you know, and handle the different moments that are inevitable for a tennis player, because everybody ultimately goes through them.
And totally agree that it's still okay to like want to get a good ranking and all that, right? You know, like when I was ranked in New England and number one in different age categories or number two in the US, it felt great, right? You know, that was part of the journey. And I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it more because of like all the work I had done that went into that. And then the goals, all right, let's try to do it again or try to do something else. But you know, the reason I'm doing it is always toward my best self and that particular journey. So any final thoughts on the topic, Josh?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think we've covered it in a lot of ways. I mean, I think, you know, we can look at top professional players, and you know, I think we can also see for a lot of them that it's not just about the results for them, right? I think for many of them, you can see that joy as they're playing. You can see that they are enjoying themselves. You know, you see them on the practice court. They seem to really want to be striving towards that mastery piece. It doesn't all seem to be about the results or about making as much money as possible or about, you know, it doesn't seem to be fully external. Is there that piece of it for probably all or most of them? Yes. But I think just understanding that it can't all be about that. And if that's true of the best players in the world, I think that can also be true of everybody. And just understanding that, yes, you want the results that you want, the ranking, right? The ranking, the external recognition, you know, big dreams of being a professional player, like that is all great. But I think another way to think about it is some of these other pieces make it more likely to also achieve the results that we want. It makes it more, you know, if we're enjoying the process, if we're able to design our environment a little bit, if we're able to make choices, if we're enjoying the people that we're around, it not only does it make it more likely that we achieve those results that we want, but I think we enjoy that process a lot more along the way, which is a huge part of it.
So if you're interested in filling out the sport motivation profile, send us an email at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. We'll send you a link to the form. And then once you complete that, we can send you a report in the couple of days after that. And that, you know, can help lead you to understand a little bit about more about your own motivation for why you play, why you compete, why you train, etc. So that's our show for today. Thank you for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for the two of us, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.